I mentioned the feast in France. At that feast, one of the speakers relayed a story that I'd like to share with you this afternoon. It's a suitable introduction to the topic that I have this afternoon. And the story is about Chief Justice John Roberts. And this past June, Chief Justice John Roberts gave the commencement address at his son's ninth grade graduation from a boarding school in New Hampshire. And maybe you read some of the speech. If you have, I'll relay a part of it again. It's an excerpt from the speech, and it was unusual because it was different from most typical commencement speeches. So I'm quoting here. He says, "Now, the commencement speakers will typically also wish you good luck and extend good wishes to you. I will not do that, and I'll tell you why. From time to time in the years to come, I hope you will be treated unfairly, so that you will come to know the value of justice. I hope that you will suffer betrayal, because that will teach you the importance of loyalty. And sorry to say, but I hope you will be lonely from time to time, so that you don't take friends for granted. I wish you bad luck, again, from time to time, so that you will be conscious of the role of chance in life, and understand that your success is not completely deserved, and that the failure of others is not completely deserved either. And when you lose, as you will from time to time, I hope every now and then your opponent will gloat over your failure. It is a way for you to understand the importance of sportsmanship. I hope you'll be ignored, so you know the importance of listening to others. And I hope you will have just enough pain to learn compassion. Whether I wish these things or not, they're going to happen. And whether you benefit from them or not will depend upon your ability to see the message in your misfortunes." That's an interesting take. I don't know if anybody has read that or had seen that or not. It was a really interesting story, especially when speaking to quite young people. As we all know, life is filled with disappointments and setbacks and trials. And we all go through trials. And a trial is something that threatens our comfort level, our sense of well-being, or our happiness. We can all probably identify that with that, probably with too much familiarity. It can threaten or actually cause physical or mental harm. The different kinds of trials will cause different things and have different effects, or it can force us to have to make a difficult decision. Perhaps trials we've been through, not perhaps, but certainly, cause fear or doubt or uncertainty. We all want that. We want certainty and clarity. Why do we have trials? Why do we have them? You know, there are actually different kinds of trials. Well, yes, there are. But there are different kinds that are described in the Bible as well. The Greek terms rendered temptation, trial, or test, those three words, temptation, trial, or test, in the New Testament are all closely related, and often they're the same word. Most of the words translated as trial, temptation, test are all derived from, I'm going to probably not pronounce this Greek word correctly, but peirazo, and I'll spell it for you, P-E-I-R-A-Z-O, which means several things. It means to test, to try, and those are related but different, or put to the proof. And from pira, another word pira, which is a related word, P-E-I-R-A, meaning to attempt or to know by experience. Now, most of us, in fact, maybe the young people haven't seen this, but there's a book called The Strong's Concordance, and many of you have one, but it is a big book. The big Strong's Concordance. I was going to bring it today, but it's a pain to lug around. It's about that big, and it's about that thick. And the Strong's Concordance will have the meanings of most every word in the Bible, either in Greek from the New Testament or Hebrew from the Old Testament. And this word in the New Testament, parazo, is typically number 3985. 3985. And the related words, like some of the words that'll be like a different tense or a different form of word is like 3986. So there are a few of those words. Now, this same word is often translated slightly differently, as I've already said, as we can see, and most of the instances, and we'll see, seem to be correct, or they get the right sense of the meaning or the context in that particular scripture. Again, usually translated as try, test, trial, or tempt. But there are differences in the kinds of trials we experience, and we will see that today. There are three types of trials. Three types of trials. The first one is a test. The first kind of a trial is a test. And the source is God. And the intended outcome is good and beneficial. It's like, really? Yes. A test from God, from God, and the intended outcome is good and beneficial and has a positive purpose. And we shouldn't resist those. That's really easy to say, but it's hard to do. But it's a test. The second kind of trial is a temptation. A temptation. And the source is not God. A temptation, the source is not God. Rather, it is either Satan, the world, or ourselves, our own carnal nature. And the intended outcome is failure or sin. It's a temptation. Now, we'll cover these first two, and then I'll get to the third a little bit later. We've already referenced it a little bit here. We'll cover, again, these first two. So when we're being tested, it's a good thing. Hard to believe, really, right? But it's a good thing. We shouldn't be negative. It's still a trial, though, for sure, and it's difficult. Sometimes, though, the same Greek word, parazo, is translated as tempt, and we'll look into that, too. Now, there's another word that's in the Bible that is, you would think, well, this must be the same word. It's not the same word. There's another word, and it's called, the word is dokime, D-O-K-I-M-E, dokime. And this word always means test. It doesn't mean tempt. It always means test, and we'll see a few of those. And its meaning is, again, to examine, to approve. And there's some really interesting verses that look at that. And it's a testing of your trustworthiness. You know, I've thought a few times and maybe said it here too. We always think, well, can I trust God? Well, God wants to know if he can trust us as well. So some of that, this word, and it's number 1381 in that big book called the Strong's Concordance, dokimi, or a similar variation is dokimion. Now, there are two scriptures in particular that we'll go to that show a direct relation to trials. Let's go to James 1. We'll go to James 1, and these are direct relations, have a direct relationship to trials. So James 1, and we'll start in verse 2. James 1, verses 2 to 4. We'll just do three verses here. It says, my brethren, and we've read this so many times, right? Count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Various trials. There's a hint that there's more than one kind, right? It says various trials, a different kind, a variety of trials. Verse 3, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So that in verse 2, it says, when you fall into various trials, that's that parazo word, right? Parazo, 3985. Verse 3, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. The intention is good, and we shouldn't resist it. There's a good purpose. That's also 3985. The other scripture that shows a clear relationship of testing as a type of trial is very similar, almost exactly similar to this phrasing in James 1. So this is one of the key verses about the trials that we go through, and we can see it here in verse 3, that the testing of your faith, that trying, that examining to see if our faith is really strong. There's a purpose for trials, a test trial. But let's go to 1 Peter 1. 1 Peter 1, And we'll read another scripture here, 1 Peter 1. Again, very similar wording to the wording and the phrasing in James 1. 1 Peter 1, verses 6 to 8. 1 Peter 1, verses 6 to 8. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by, again, various trials. There are different kinds of trials. That the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen, you love. Though now you do not see him, yet believing you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory. So we see again various trials, and verse 7 is tested by fire to perfect your faith. So it's a good intention. And sometimes what happens with fire? Fire gets hot. It's not easy. Now let's go back to James 1. We want to read a little bit further down in that chapter and see something else. James 1, so just a book back there. James 1 and verses 12 to 14. James 1 verses 12 to 14. So it says here, blessed is the man who endures temptation. It's translated differently here. For when he has been approved, again, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. And again, so in verse 12 here, it's when approved. That's the word, when approved, when tested, when verified, when you're examined and your faith comes up to be strong. And verse 13 is a really important point here. God does not tempt. That's a different kind of trial. God does not tempt. Why doesn't God tempt? Why doesn't he tempt? He's not tempted by evil himself, nor does he use it to tempt anyone else. It's pretty clear here. But that's a different kind of trial. And we've all probably been tempted ourselves, but that does not come from God. And the temptations are usually not of God. So it's to break God's law or to sin. We can tell that that is a temptation. It's a different kind of trial. Again, we are to yield to tests, but we are to fight temptations. Now, there are some uses of the word dokini, the other word. It's number 1381 and 1383. And I'd like to show you some of those words. Let's go to Luke 14. Luke 14, and this is the parable of the Great Supper. And remember that parable when people were being invited to the supper or to follow Christ. But there were all kinds of excuses. And there's a word here, the one that's the dokime, which is very much and very specifically about trying and testing. And we'll see it here as well. Luke 14, verse 19. Jumping into a thought here. So one of the people's excuse was, in verse 19, he said, well, I can't go because I have bought five yoke of oxen, and I'm going to test them. I ask you to have me excused. So testing the oxen. Now, I haven't bought a horse before, but maybe you have. Some of you, I'm sure, have. But you want to go test it. Or if you've bought, working mules. One of the stories that I tell my girls from time to time, I remember when I had to be 5 or 6 years old, that we'd go out and we'd visit my mother's mother and father, and he would still plow with a mule. And I thought it was normal, right? Even then it probably wasn't, but he would plow with a mule. So if you test a mule, and Mr. Luganbill may have worked mules before, but you want to if you're going to buy a team of mules, you want to test them. Well, this man here is testing them in Luke 14, 19. He's trying them to see if they're actually injured or if they are suitable work animals, right? So that word is very much about testing and trying for genuineness or to see if they're approved for purchase. 2 Corinthians 8. Let's go see another example here. 2 Corinthians 8 about testing. 2 Corinthians 8. Break into a thought here. And this, of course, is Paul writing to the church at Corinth, and much of the much of his letters to Corinth were correctional, or were corrective. And breaking into a thought in verse 8, looking for the word here, dokime, about testing. It says, verse 8, I speak not by commandment, but I am testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. I'm testing the sincerity of your love. So is it true? Is it genuine? So it's to approve the genuineness of their love. 1 Thessalonians 5. 1 Thessalonians 5. Again, this different word, 1381, 1383. 1 Thessalonians 5, 21. Again, Paul is writing to the Thessalonians, and the Thessalonians were they were being deceived, frankly, by people who were coming saying that the day of the Lord had already come, or it was here. And so this was a message, part of the message. And he says here, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, we'll start in verse 19. Do not quench the Spirit, verse 20, do not despise prophecies. Verse 21, test all things. Hold fast what is good. Abstain from evil or from every form of evil. But verse 21, test all things. Test all things. In other words, that's the word dokime there, to try, to examine it. This is a type of, this is the word that's used without exception to talk about a trial or a test that we have to test the genuineness of our faith. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 3. 1 Corinthians 3. And we'll see here that sometimes the fire does get hot in trials and tests. 1 Corinthians 3, we'll start in verse 11. 1 Corinthians 3, starting in verse 11, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on this foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, verse 13, each one's work will become clear, for the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire. And the fire will teach, or the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is. So these tests will come, but these are good things. When our faith is tested, and the test is from God, it's not a temptation, and we'll see another one, another type of trial in a few minutes, but this is a good thing. It doesn't seem good at the moment, but it's testing our faith. And this is a kind of test that's different from temptation. When I read this sometimes, it doesn't exactly make sense, but I think of the story of the TV series Kung Fu. Remember Kung Fu? I know girls have never seen this, but it was in the early 70s, and I was just, you know, everything was, most things, most TV shows, and we watched a lot of TV as kids, were Westerns, or a lot of them were. And the story of Kung Fu, the actor David Carradine was in training. Remember, he was in training to be a Shaolin priest in China. He was in a temple in China, and he was known by Grasshopper, by his master. And so even today, occasionally, you will hear somebody throw that and say, yes, Grasshopper, that's right. Most people, the younger people, don't remember or don't know what that is. But but remember, Grasshopper, he was always being tested by his master. One master in particular, Master Po, who was blind. And he would have a stone in his hand. And he said, when you can grab the stone from my hand, you will pass the test and you'll be able to leave. Right? And then when he finally did it, he says, Grasshopper, it is time for you to go. Remember what he did after that? Before he went, there was a big, hot pot that was over an open fire, and he had to put his forearms around that and seal the symbol from the temple as a Shaolin priest. And again, I think of that when you think of It will be revealed by fire, and fire will test each one's work. He was always in testing, and we are too. It's a testing of our faith, of our genuine faith and belief in God. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 16, just a few chapters over. 1 Corinthians 16. This is another example of the word being used. And so when we see this word, we'll know and we can see what the word means, dokime, or to approve or to test the genuineness of our faith. So testing of our faith is the source is God, and that is it's a good thing, even though it's difficult at times. And verse 3 of chapter 1 Corinthians 16, whomever you approve is the message here. Now concerning the collection for the saints, we'll start in verse 1, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. And when I come, whomever you approve, in other words, you examine, you try, you get your seal of approval, by your letters I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. So these trials of our faith and having been approved. Now this next verse I'm going to go to is in 1 John 4, and it shows the meaning of the word, but it also provides a really good principle that we can use to discern between the different types of trials. 1 John 4. And verse 1, 1 John 4. And again, it shows the meaning of the word, but it gives us a principle of how we can discern the difference. And that's really the point today, is to look at our trials and to see if it's a temptation, or is it a test of our faith, or is it the third kind that we'll talk about in just a few minutes. 1 John 4, verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. So it shows the meaning of the word test for us, but it also lets us know we should examine things we hear and use discernment to know if they're from God. It also lets us know the difference between a temptation and a test. A temptation, and we'll talk about that in a moment, will be from Satan. And it's usually something against God and against God's law. God's not going to tempt us to do that. He says he doesn't. So a temptation will most always go against God's law and his way of living. One final example of this word dokimi, the 1383 or 1381, we'll go to 1 Thessalonians 2. You would think, well, why didn't you put those together if you're already in 1 Thessalonians? But it's fun to keep no, it's not. We'll just go back and forth here. Just the order makes sense. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 4. But it says, but as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. So our test now, we're going through trials and tests to see if we're trustworthy. Even so, we speak not as pleasing men, but God who tests our hearts. God doesn't tempt, but he does test our hearts, whether we truly believe, and he will test the genuineness of our faith. So we covered a test, which is a type of trial. Now let's talk about temptation. Temptation. A temptation, again, we talked about it, the author is not God, and the intended result is negative or failure or sin. It's a temptation. And perhaps the best known example is in Matthew 4. Let's go to Matthew 4. You probably thought of that already. When Satan was tempting Christ. It's the great battle, and again, Satan was, wow, God himself is here on the earth. Now's my chance. It was the battle, and if you look at that, Jesus Christ's ministry didn't really start in full until after this temptation. Then Matthew 4, verse 1 to 3, we won't read all of it, but we'll just, and if you want to, obviously later, that would be a good thing to read, but we'll just read three verses. In Matthew 4, in verse 1, it says, Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, if you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. So he was he was saying, I don't believe that you're really God. He knew he was, but he was tempting him to do something. Jesus Christ was tempted by Satan, and even Satan was referred to here in this example as the tempter. Satan, temptations come from Satan or the world or our own carnal nature. And we can note the things that were used to try and tempt Christ to worship a being other than God and other related tactics. So we can see a temptation is something to go against God. And that comes from ourselves or Satan or the world. God doesn't do that. That's a temptation. That's different from a test that God gives us. Let's go to Hebrews 4. Hebrews 4. I think the book of Hebrews is really interesting. I was listening this morning and this afternoon to one of the FI online classes that Mr. Johnson was teaching about Hebrews and just the all the historical things that happened in the book of Hebrews. It was probably it's most likely written just before the temple was destroyed in AD 70, because it was referring to a lot of the sacrifices and everything that went on in the temple. And if the temple had been destroyed, it would certainly have mentioned that. So the book of Hebrews was probably written about 67 to 68 AD. Most people think by Paul, but this example here in verse 15 of Hebrews 4 shows us that Christ was tempted as well. Hebrews 4, verse 15, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. So he was tempted, but he didn't succumb. And that's the perfect example. It's the perfect example. Now, we won't go to 1 Corinthians 1, but 1 Corinthians 1, verse 10 is an excellent example of the examples that are shown is ancient Israel and how they were tempted and they succumbed. And again, showing that, and we'll reference one verse here later, but if you want to read that later, 1 Corinthians 10, verses 1 to 13, talks about ancient Israel being an example for us of how not to behave. So it's a good thing to read later. So there are three types of trials. So we've talked about tests. So tests, the source is God, and the intended outcome is good and positive. We shouldn't resist that. And we've talked about temptations. The source is not God. The source is the world or ourselves or Satan. And the outcome is negative. The intended outcome is failure or sin. And there's a third type of trial that we can experience and probably have, and that is time, or time and chance. Trials of time and chance happen, and time and chance happen to us because we live and exist in this world, but it's a trial nonetheless. Now, time and chance can be good. This week, Celia, our daughter, I guess it was this week she won a drawing, right? It was a time and chance drawing at school. I think everyone had the chance to do it, and she won a certificate for a free Domino's pizza with two toppings. That's time and chance, right? Because everyone at that school, that's time and chance. That's a good one. Now, you probably had some examples where time and chance was really good for you, right? And probably time and chance where it was bad for us as well. But there's also the fact, not just time and chance, but time itself, that we actually get older, that we are getting older. And that can be a trial as well. But it's about time. Now, before the feast last year, and I'll tell you this, and you probably have examples of this too. The right before the feast, I broke a tooth, and it wasn't like just a small tooth. It was a significant tooth, right? It was an upper molar, and I went in and I was like, "Well, this is causing a lot of pain." And she said, "You've broken that tooth, and you're going to have that thing pulled." And so I pulled it, and the massive hole it left, she said, "You're going to want to get an implant for that." Right? So I went to the feast with this massive hole in my head, right? And knowing that a few months later I had to get a screw in my head. And then after that, an implant attached, and then a crown put on that. I just had some serious back troubles. My knee was hurting. I said, I'm falling apart. Who hasn't experienced that if you've gotten to a certain age, right? That could be, that wasn't a trial or a test. It wasn't a temptation. It was a trial. Well, it wasn't a big trial. You know, some of the people we've talked about have a lot worse trials. We've read about a few today, right? Time and chance, or just having time. Let's go to Ecclesiastes 9. Now, Ecclesiastes is, I think, an absolutely fascinating book, and it really talks about the human condition, right? In fact, the Jews usually read the book of Ecclesiastes at the Feast of Tabernacles, because it focuses on the temporary nature of our existence, our physical life, and it points to a greater purpose. But in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11, we'll see about time and chance. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. Now, it is usually, right? Usually people who are, the fastest runners usually win, but not always. The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Again, it usually is, but not always. It's not always to the strongest people. We've seen that. I think one of the examples I recall is a few Olympics ago. Remember the great Russian wrestler? He was invincible. He had never lost in his whole life. He was this mountain of a guy. And an American wrestler came up and they said, he doesn't have a chance. I think he was from Iowa, one of those big, I don't know if he was a farm boy or had tackled a few cows or whatever. He was big too. And there was something he did, and he beat the Russian wrestler, right? Even though the Russian wrestler had never been beaten and was still in his prime, and everyone said, he's going to win, there's no doubt. But it's the race is not always to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill. But time and chance happen to them all. It's a part of living in this world. Time and chance. Time and chance. Now, Mr. Bacchus will be glad to know this, that a couple of months, or maybe a month or so ago in our office, there was a charity thing, right? It was a putting thing. If you could putt a ball into a hole in a box that was maybe 10 or 12 yards away, you got, for $10 to the charity. It sounds like gambling, but it was for charity, right? And you could putt the ball, and if you got, for $10, you got three balls. So I got two of them in. And they said, well, we're going to have a drawing. So I said, well, I don't care about the drawing. Well, I cared a couple weeks later when my name was actually drawn out of there. Where everybody had tickets in there. That was time and chance, too. Those things happen. But time and chance happen to everybody and to all of us. Let's go to Job 5. Job 5, in verse 7, it sounds like we're all born to be rebels here, right? Because it says we're born to trouble, just born to trouble. That's the human existence. Job 5, verse 7, it says, yet man is born to trouble as the sparks fly upward. If you have a fire in your backyard, without exception, right? If there are sparks that come off of that, they usually go up. They don't go down. It says here, man is born to trouble as sparks fly upward. This life is filled with good time and chance and bad time and chance. You know, one of the comments of Chief Justice John Roberts when he was giving his commencement, a part that he said before to these ninth grade boys, that I didn't read. He goes, you may not think this, but this is the easy time of your life. And it is, right? When you're in sixth to ninth grade, that's usually the easy time of life. But it doesn't get easier. It doesn't get easier. Let's go to Job 14. Job 14. It speaks of this as well, of what happens to us in life. Job 14, verse 1, says, "Man who is born of woman," that would be everyone, "is of a few days and full of trouble." That's life. Time and chance and age happens to all of us. Age happens to everyone as well. Even then, though, even with time and chance, we know that God can and will help. Even with time and chance. If you're in a car accident sometimes, it was no fault of your own. It's clearly a time and chance. God can help us through that or around that as well. Now, there's a German philosopher who died more than 100 years ago. He was a German philosopher, a poet, a composer, and a writer. His name was Friedrich Nietzsche. By all accounts, not a really nice person, not somebody you'd want to hang around with, but he influenced a lot of thought. Nietzsche was a philosopher that was really arrogant, had a lot of ill things to say, but he, again, you know, usually with bad things, he had some wise things as well. And something he wrote in 1887, and it was published in a selection from his notebooks after he died, in The Will to Power, in the public library. Nietzsche writes under the heading, "Types of My Disciples." He said, "To those human beings who are of any concern to me, I wish suffering, desolation, sickness, ill treatment, indignities, I wish that they should not remain unfamiliar with profound self-contempt, the torture of self-mistrust, the wretchedness of the vanquished. I have no pity for them because I wish them the only thing that can prove today whether one is worth anything or not, that one endures." And I thought that was a really telling phrase, that we do have trials. We have trials that are tests. We have trials that are temptations. And we have trials that are just plain related to time or time and chance. And don't resist, we're not to resist the trials. We want our faith to be tested so we can learn and grow. But we should resist the temptations and ask for God's help through and around time and chance and time. And we're all getting to the point of, or many of us, the few people in the back. I was thinking of maybe putting the lectern in the back so you'd be in the front today. But I'm just kidding. But you aren't realizing the effects of old age yet. Although I remember when I was 25, a long time ago, playing softball. And I remember actually losing like half a step, like being a little bit slower from one year to the next. And now I'm a lot slower, right? And I'm afraid to play softball because I don't want to blow my knee out, right? But we know those things happen. So it's test, temptations, and time, or time and chance. Let's go to James 5. James 5. Many people refer to the book of James as the New Testament version of the book of Proverbs. And James 5, verse 11 says this. James 5, verse 11. We already were in the early part of the book of James, but we'll go to chapter 5. James 5, verse 11. "Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful." He's very compassionate and merciful. And the end is always positive. He doesn't want to test us to have us fail. He wants to test us to see if our genuineness, the genuineness of our faith is true and pure. And he wants to know if he can trust us with eternal life. So it's a beautiful verse there, James 5. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10 now. I just want to read one verse there. It's a really beautiful section of Scripture. You can read that later if you want, but I'll read one verse and verse 13. Just one part of it. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." And there's a beautiful verse in Psalms. I haven't written it down, and I've probably mentioned it before. Even during trials, it says that God will give us a wide place. And I've said this before. I always think of Highway 80 in East Texas, right? It's a two-way road with probably the biggest shoulders on a road I've seen. And in East Texas, if you're driving along, you can actually, if somebody comes up behind you, you're expected to pull over under the shoulder and drive and let them pass you. Right, and I always think of that road when I think of the verse in Psalms that says that during the trials, God will give us a wide place. He'll make a way that we can escape it, and He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able. But you know, someday there won't be trials. Have you thought of that? Someday there won't be trials. We just celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles, and we probably read a verse about the ultimate future time when there won't be trials. And that sometime in the future sometimes is hard to imagine. Revelation 21, read this verse in closing. Revelation 21, verses 3 to 6, we talk about a time, and actually, you know, in the future, I don't know this, but it's my opinion, I don't think we'll remember the times of trials that we've had, because there'll be too much to focus on at the present that's beautiful and wonderful, and an endless future of creating things. God's a creator. I think we're probably the happiest when we create things, and we'll be focused on that. I don't think we'll look back, but this is the time in the future, and it's a beautiful thing. A beautiful time to think about when there won't be trials. Revelation 21, verse 3. "And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God.'" Verse 4, "And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying." And I could add here, again, I'm not adding to this word, I'm just saying, when I read this, I think there won't be any more trials. "There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Then he who sat on the throne said, 'Behold, I make all things new.' And he said to me, 'Write, for these words are true and faithful.' And he said to me, 'It is done. I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts.'" There'll be a time when there are no trials. There won't be tests. There won't be temptations. There won't be time and chance. You won't get older. You won't have bad knees. And I'm sure that some people in here probably have false hips or replacement knees. And someday, though, those trials and tests and the temptations and time and chance and just the effects of time will be gone. And we'll know that we have a bright future ahead. At that point, again, I don't think we'll look back. But for now, we must trust God to see us through the various kinds of trials.